Hello, I'm Frieda Morrison. Welcome to Scots Language Radio. Welcome to the programme that celebrates the Scots language, the culture, the sang, and the soons. In this edition, I'm visiting the Bard, the cottage where the bairn was born. We enjoy the company of Robert Burns through his poetry and sang. We've a report for Shetland, and we're in Angus hearing about the life and works of Violet Jacob. We've got a packed programme again, and we start this year by looking at fits being planned by the Scots Language Centre. And we've exciting news about a new award for communities called the Scots Toon Award. But first, I asked the director of the centre, Michael Hance, about the highlights for last year.
Well, it was a great year, really, for Scots, Frieda. We had, the biggest highlight of the year was the census results coming out. And that was a very exciting moment for us. We'd been involved right from the start in the planning, campaigning to get the question in the first place. And then,
just remind us again, Michael, what the results showed.
Well, it showed there was 1.5 million folk that said they could speak Scots. So that was very encouraging, and it confirmed the results of the surveys that was done back in the 90s, which suggested there was 1.5 million, but it wasn't really a totally comprehensive survey, so folk didn't ken for sure if the figures was right or wrong. And the census results confirmed that they were right, so that was really encouraging.
But without being a devil's advocate, which is exactly what I'm going to be, So what? You've got the results, but what can you do about it?
Well, I mean, if you're to mak ony kind of plans for language at all, you need to ken fu mony folks speak a language, and you need to ken for the bide. And this is what this information has given us, so it's a kind of starting point.
It's a good, you're off the starting block.
Aye, well, absolutely, because previous to this we didn't ken anything, really, about far as folk bade, fu mony there was, and now we ken all this information. So, I mean, it's a great start.
Okay, you had another highlight, I would imagine, with the appointment of the Scots language coordinators in schools. What difference is that going to make, do you think?
Well, I'm not absolutely certain yet, because we didn't care how far this folk is, but I mean, we'll care soon. The coordinators ourselves hasn't been, the names of the folk that's been appointed hasn't been announced yet, but we expect to hear about it in the next couple of weeks. And I think there's four of them for the whole country, so I don't really ken how that'll be split up, but I suppose it'll be in for the North Isles, somebody for the North East, and then two others, but I didn't really ken far they'll be. But that's a great start, and it was a promise that was made by this government, and they have fulfilled it, which is great. It shows a commitment to Scots in education, and we're very pleased. But what we hope to do is work with this folk.
Right, we're into this year now.
Aye.
Plans for the Scots Language Centre, fit are they?
Well, working with the coordinators for a start, we've announced our new award for communities that encourage and promote Scots. It's called the Scots Toon Award.
Now, what's that about?
Well, this come out for the folk will maybe mind there was a wee group of folk that met over about a year called the Ministerial Working Group for Scots. And it was a group of folk appointed by Mike Russell, that was the culture minister at the time. He's the education secretary now, but at the time he was the culture minister. And he brought together, I think it was about 8 folk, to speak about how we could encourage and promote Scots. And any of the ideas that came for it, along with coordinators' jobs, was to have an award for communities that encouraged and promoted Scots.
Now, how are they going to do that then?
Well, they have to tell us. That's a whole thing.
Isn't he just putting Scots words onto street names then?
Well, maybe, but they have to demonstrate different ways that they're promoting and encouraging Scots. So it maybe will be something like putting Scots street names, or hanging signs in Scots, or encouraging Scots in schools or haying community writing groups or something like that for folk and youth Scots. But it's a kind of starting off point. Again, there's a lot of starting points this year, and this award will it's a kind of trial run, let's say.
See who it goes.
See who it goes. I mean, what we're hoping is that we'll get applications for round about the country, but we'll just need to wait and see.
The folk apply to the Scots Language Centre for application forms.
They'll find the details on our website, but it's a separate website. It's called scotstoon.co.uk, and you can get the information there. But if you go to the Scots Language Centre website, scotslanguage.com, you'll see all the details there. And it's an easy application form, and there's 12 prizes. There's in for 6,000 and in for, I think it's 5,000. So you can get money to improve the way you support Scots in your community.
Right, could you just repeat those two figures again?
6,000 is a prize, aye. That's the first prize. And 5,000 is the second prize.
Michael Hance, Director of the Scots Language Centre. Let me mind you on the link to how you can find the judging forms. It's www.scots-toon.co.uk. www.scots-toon.co.uk. Now, best of luck. I mean, 6,000 and £4,000 on offer, right now. And the Minister for Scotland's Languages, Alistair Allen, announced the award and encouraged communities to get involved. Now, the deadline, listen to this, the deadline for entries is the 28th of February, so you'll need to get a move on. 28th of February, the deadline. Now, I hae been to far history was born, to a cottage on the edge of Alloway, far on the 25th of January, 1759. Agnes, wife of William, gave birth to a baby boy, and that baby was to become the man that transformed Scots poetry and song. The man far's writing about the dignity of men would resonate throughout the world. His name was Robert Burns. And at this time of year, Burns' suppers and his memory are being held all over the globe. I joined the education manager, Chris Waddle, in Burns' cottage, the humble source of the bard's inspiration, and asked Chris why Burns had such an effect worldwide.
I think it's the quality of his work. I'm absolutely convinced that that's what it is. It's the fact that his poetry was just so good. And I think a huge part of that was the fact that it was written really in this mixture of Scots and English. You know, Burns used the language of his everyday life to compose his poetry, but he was a good enough poet, a smart enough poet to use an English word where it fitted, you know, to preserve the metrical structure of a poem and to make the rhyme work. There are statues to him everywhere. He has his own day. We read his poems and we recite his poems with an almost religious fervour. A classic example is how we address the haggis at a Burns supper. It's done in a very stern and sometimes a pompous way, depending on how it's done. It's a satire. It's a comedy. It's a poem about a pudding. And Burns did it almost as
a joke. Because he was a performer.
He was a performer. And a performer with a great sense of humour.
The songs he's collected. He's also a song collector. Without Burns, we would not have had many of the songs we're singing today.
That's right. His contribution to the collection of songs has helped really preserve our folk and traditional music world in Scotland. You know, a lot of those traditions are in place thanks to Burns and of course, his contemporaries that were working with him in things like the Scots Musical Museum. But it's important to remember as well that this was all part of daily life for Burns. Burns grew up in a world where people sang on a daily basis. People understood songs, they learned songs, they knew them off by heart, songs and poems as well, in a way that we don't now. If we want to hear music now, we press a button. You couldn't hear music that easily then. It had to be made for you, that you had to have musicians and singers. And in the absence of them, people sung among themselves. So what he was doing was essentially taking those elements of daily life and preserving them, crystallising them for the future. Burns was a visionary man and he understood that this music was being lost and it had to be preserved in a way that, you know, he prefigured people like Cecil Sharp and Ralph Vaughan Williams in England and the Lomaxes in the United States in the 1930s. What they did then, Burns had done in Scotland, you know, 150 years before.
Can we wander into into the byre. We're up here. We're still going to be followed by the chuckens. I may add that the chuckens are not with us. They're in a very effective sound effect tape somewhere above our heads. As we're moving through from into the byre into the parlour, well, he would have had his teacher in here, but my father insisted that he got a good teacher and a good schooling.
Yes, yes. William Burns was quite a stern and religious Scot in the classic mould.
And a stern gairdner
at that. So he engaged the tutor, John Murdoch, who taught the boys, and the boys then disseminated the knowledge onto the younger sisters as well.
It wasn't just books, it wasn't just poetry, it was an entire, what we would call a holistic education, wasn't it? He knew about nature, for instance. He knew about Latin, he knew all the classics.
I mean, apart from having a sound grounding in the classics, you know, Burns, bear in mind, was the son of a poor farmer, and yet he had a working knowledge of Latin and Greek. How many folk nowadays can make that claim? But quite apart from anything else, he had an innate understanding of the countryside. Burns was the consummate countryman. Make no mistake about that. He absolutely knew those birds and beasts. He knew the flowers, and he knew how to name them, and he knew how to identify them.
And he knew the connections. I've often referred to him as the father of biodiversity as well.
I think there's definitely something in that. There's an element of truth in that. Burns, not only did he understand them, but he loved them, and that love comes through. But what Burns does, and this is what makes him the father of biodiversity, is he places man in the landscape as part of it. Man isn't separate from it.
Now Westland Winds is a good example of that.
Exactly, yes, yes.
Now we're standing here in front of a recessed bed. Mm-hmm. Is that the bed where he was actually born?
Yes, and as far as we're aware, this is the very bed that Burns was born in.
You know, I've spoken in Burns suppers, I've done the Mortal Memories, Replies, sung Burns songs, studied Burns, written essays about Burns. To stand here, Chris, it's almost like a spiritual experience.
Well, do you know, if you look at it, it is almost altar-like, the bed, especially the way we've interpreted it with the christening goons of the Wains there, with Burns and his brother Gilbert and his sisters Annabella and Agnes all born in this bed. But there is a religiosity attached to Burns, make no mistake about that. He's often thought upon as this peasant artist of, you know, the heaven-taught ploughman and the ploughman poet and all that. If people think that about Burns, in my opinion, they've misunderstood him because he's a far more complex character. But on the surface, that is what he appears to be. And I think that appeals to the great majority of folk. There is a trustworthiness about him. And it comes across in his songs where he's very upfront, his songs and his poems, you know, is there for honest poverty? You know, that is a fantastic line. It's a simple question that asks about a universal truth, you know, and it leads on to these notions, these grand and high notions about the brotherhood of mankind. But it's delivered in what is, in essence, a peasant and a folk language. But I'll go back to a perennial favourite of mine, and it's because it refers to the countryside. And I'm a great lover of the Scots countryside, and like Burns, I love the plants and the animals therein, and just the feel of the place, and it's a particular passage which exemplifies it to me. You can feel yourself positioned in his footsteps when you listen to this quotation, and it's the first verse from The Holy Fair. Do you want to hear it?
The poem. Go on, Chris.
Right. The Holy Fair. Upon a summer Sunday morn, when nature's face is fair, I walk forth to view the corn and snuff the collar air. The rising sun o'er Goston moors with glorious light was glinting. The hares were hirpling down the furze. The lavrocks, they were chanting. Foo sweet that day.
Foo sweet that day.
Absolutely. It comes straight from the heart. It's torn from the very breast of Burns, that final line. It is a joyous celebration of who he is and where he is at that time.
Chris Waddle guiding me through history and the rooms of Burns's cottage. Well, the recurring theme in this programme is going to be man, landscape and language. And that gives me a perfect chance to introduce my studio guest, a man weel kent for his grasp of the land. Like Burns's father, William, he's a gairdner, he's from Galloway, and he's a curator at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Edinburgh. Welcome to the programme, David Mitchell.
Ah, it's grand to be here, Frieda.
Now, you were listening to Chris there. Fit to you, the land and the landscape influences with Burns.
The man just was touch of day's soul. It was as though the ground come right up through his body into his brain. He could smell it, he could feel it, he embraced it in everything he did. He didn't waste his time. His eyes were busy all the time.
We got some examples of it.
Well, he was observing life. Oh, his life. I mean, if you think about some of the songs that he wrote, like the Birks of Aberfeldy, I mean, he only spent a wee while in the Highlands, but that wonderful song came out of it. Another one is I Come Over the Kearney Mount with that lovely line, and Doon Among the Blooming Heather. It's just the way it's said and it's rounded, the rhythm of it. It's almost as though you can smell the pollen. You can almost smell the honey and feel the heat. You can almost hear the bees in the rhythm of it.
Did he try and influence some of the environment about him? I remember speaking to you not that long ago about the Duke of Atholl. What was that about? Was that about trees?
Well, that's a long story, you see, because after his Highland tour, he wrote quite a long poem, The Humble Partition of the Brewer Water. And it basically was an appeal to the Duke of Atholl to plant mair trees.
Did he do it?
Well, he did. And you can still go in there and see them today and see the benefit of it. But he was able to give the land a voice, to make things that couldn't speak for themselves speak for themselves.
Like the moose, of course.
Well, I will come to that later, though. But just think about that poem there, The Humble Petition of the Brewer Water. Would then now my noble master please to grant my highest wishes? He'll shade my banks with towering trees and bony spreading bushes. Delighted doubly then, my lord, you'll wander on my banks and listen many a grateful bird return a tuneful thanks.
That's lovely.
What he did was he gave the burn a voice to say, if you plant my banks with trees, there'll be lots of birds and beasties here, and when you come wandering about with your big stick laird, you'll be able to hear a much nicer place to walk in. Wait a minute, is that no what we talk about now, conservation and restoring the environment?
But fit about the mountain daisy, it's a greatie. Have you got one thing for that?
Well, I think I learnt that poem as a boy, and it's just... We're talking about a wee scootery weed that you'd stamp on, and yet Burns writes, "Wee modest crimson tippet flower, thou's met me in an evil hour, for I'm uncrushed among the stour, thy slender stem, thou bonny gem." You can almost feel his guilt at turning the tiny wee flower over with a plough.
Now, this is a good time to introduce my regular studio companion, eh? We're song sorter and tradition advisor, ethnologist Steve Byrne. Now, Steve, Fit Davis saying will resonate with you, and indeed Fit Chris was saying earlier on. Fit your observations about Burns and the landscape.
Well, I think the song you mentioned is a case in point insofar as Westland Winds and Slaughter and Guns. I mean, that, even in terms of a line.
It's a great song, that.
The juxtaposition of that between the landscape and mankind and the dignity of man and now the kind of simplicity of daily life, I just think that's an awful peculiar but fantastic juxtaposition. Yeah,
that was one of the first songs that you ever wrote. Well, you wrote it when you were 16, apparently.
Aye.
Right. Steve, introduce for us, if you will, this version of Westland Winds. It's a cracker.
Well, Westland Winds, of course, is associated with Dick Gochan, but this is a recording that folk maybe didn't ken so weel. Insofar as it's his Live in Edinburgh album, 1985. And this is Dick coming back into singing after a wee break. He'd had a bit of trouble with his voice, and I just think this is an absolutely cracking version from Dick Gochan, New Westland Winds.
Now Westland Winds and slaughtering guns bring autumn's pleasant weather. The moorcock springs on, bring wings of mine, the blooming heather. Now waving grain wild o'er the plain, delights the weary farmer. The moon shines bright when I roll at night to muse my charmer. A partridge loves the
fruitful fells. Plover loves the mountains. The woodcock haunts the lonely dells. Soaring high, the fountains. Through lofty groves, the cushat roves, the path of man to shun it. The hazel bush o'erhangs the thrush, the spreading thorn, the linnet. Thus every kind their pleasure find, the savage and the tender. Some social join and plagues combine, some solitary wonder. Upon to weigh the cruel sway, tyrannic man's dominion, the sportsman's joy, the murdering cry, the fluttering gory pinion. But Peggy dear, the evening's clear, swift flies the skimming swallow. The sky is blue, the fields in view, all fading green and yellow. Come, let us stray our gladsome way and view the charms of nature, the rustling corn, the fruit and thorn, and every happy creature. We'll gently walk and sweetly talk till the silent moon shine clearly. I'll grasp thy waist and fondly breast, swear how I love thee dearly. Not vernal showers to budding flowers, not autumn to the farmer, so dear can be as thou to me, my fair, my lovely charmer.
Wow. Now Whistling Winds, sung by Dick Gochan. What a fantastic song, and so well sung by Dick. I've yet to do my Burn Supper this year. I'm a guest of the University Club in Aberdeen. I'm doing the reply for the lassies, and I'll say this very quickly. The toast of the lassies will be done by Buff Hardy for Scotland. What? It's going to be a raring. It's going to be a rare tear. And the tickets are sell-teat, I can tell you. Well, as Burns is celebrated in Bothies and Biggins and Burghs all over the world, there's mair than a celebration going on at this time of the year in Scotland. Any of the biggest, if nae the biggest, music festivals is, of course, rooted in Glasgow, is Celtic Connections. And it's just gone from strength to strength with record crowds again this year. Of course, there's Uphelia in Shetland, the spectacular annual fire festival with fire and flame and fun. And I'm biding in Shetland for our next item. They're starting the year off with a lot going on and a lot more to come. This report from Mary Blantz.
We do have a lock of dialect news in Shetland at the moment, where dialect promotion group Shetland Forwards has just launched their latest ploy, had in 2014 as a year of Shetland dialect, under a new Facebook group where Midir Tongue has got some fine discussion going. First, that year of dialect. Shetland Forwards got it under wy wi a fianna, a Shetland word for a sociable night spent in a boot wi friends. And afterwards I had a word wi their vice convener Bruce Johnson, why a year a Shetland dialect.
The reason is our 10th anniversary. It was 2004 that the Shetland Arts Trust at the time held a conference to promote the dialect or to discuss its perhaps decline, and we're glad to say that 10 years later we're Shetland Forwards, the group that came to that conference, is going strong and very much eager to do what happened in 2004 and bring new members in and advertise what we're doing, and a lot like what's happened tonight, celebrate Shetland dialect but also offer a stage for folk that maybe aren't a face Shetland to come and listen and to read and to be part of it and share in the enjoyment of it, because we're had a great fun tonight. We've had a lot of laughs, whether it's been poetry or group readings or just friends coming together for some food and drinks, but we're hoping to have plenty of events throughout the year that bring everybody across Shetland together in a celebration of dialect.
And there is actually a slogan.
Spick it and lick it.
Spick it and lick it. Spicking about it is very much what folk do. It's signed up for a new Facebook group. That's Faceclute in local parlance. And it's Marina Mainland Sinclair. It's a hint we're mid her tongue. Marina, why did you begin to think that this was a good idea to have a Faceclute page were mid her tongue?
Well, I suppose it just started me spending a lot of time on Faceclute and writing in Shetland dialect on Faceclute. And I just thought the day, I wonder if I could just start this Shetland dialect group. And I didn't really put an awful lot of thought into it, and I just created the group and then started asking folk, and folk started to join. And I just started posting various things just to see really how it would go, and posting some poetry, my word of the day, videos with songs, just anything at all that has Shetland dialect in it, and just take it for there really and get folk to engage in various posts.
And Lictopsy had really just grown. I think there's maybe a pretty bit surprised at the amount of discussion and the membership it's grown up.
Pleasantly surprised that we're over 300 members in just 1 month. I'm just wondering what the future is now for us, and are we going to keep growing? Am I going to be able to cope with all this? But it's a great project for me as well, because I have plenty of time on my hands and I can devote the time to it. I mean, I can a lot of folk think Faceclute, you're spending far too much time on you in there, but now with this dialect page, I feel that I can spend a lot of time on it because it's a worthwhile project I'm doing. I'm not just wittering away my time, I'm doing something that is really, really worthwhile.
Is you learning a lot about the dialect as you gangs along?
Oh yeah, I'm learning new words every day, and it's a learning curve, and it's a learning curve for us all, I think. Everybody that's in Wormiddertongue.
With Marina Mainland Sinclair, it's getting discussion under why we words of the day and laying up goddicks. Goddicks? That's for another time.
Goddicks, a great word, isn't it? Mary Blanche there. Now you heard what Mary did there in that report, and I would awful like to encourage mayor folk for our the Scots speaking areas to send in their own reports. Now, if you fancy being any of our reporters, get in Towies at the Scots Language Centre or email us on, listen to this note, info@scotslanguageradio.com. info@scotslanguageradio.com. We're looking for reports for our own the Scots speaking areas in Scotland. Leave your contact details and we'll get back in touch. Can I tell my wee story about uphill yeah and Shetland though?
All right.
Wee story. I was up doing a few interviews for, I was working in the Fairman programme, Radio Scotland at the time, and there was giners all around the place in this building that I was trying to do interviews in, hammering, for other worth, hammering that way. So I took this money into a cupboard to do the interview with him. He said it was quieter in the cupboard. Honest, it was absolutely.
Aye.
So we did the interview, and I finished the interview, and we came jumping out of the cupboard, and I came face to face with Winnie Ewan. Winnie, she got an awful fight. She said, Tita, what's you doing in that cupboard with money?
Didn't mean to ruin it. So we got in town, of course, that hill up Helia, and he kennis, I will never forget that year again, Runa Halls with Winnie Ewan, that up Helia celebration. It was fantastic. What a great company she was.
You've an awful lot of stories about cupboards and bothies and things. Mind that, Ian, last month about the sheep. You'll have to get Ian for next
cupboards,
month.
Cupboards, aye. Maybe I should just say tails for the cupboard.
What a good idea.
Aye, tails. What's a Scots word for cupboard?
The press?
Lunky
hole.
A lunky hole. I did a whole series in Radio Scotland about tales for the Morgan. You mind what the Morgan is?
Aye.
Because, up in Peterhead, you get the blue Morganers, you see.
Right.
Okay, I wouldn't go in there.
No, didn't go in near the new.
Tales for the Morgan. Right. Still in Shetland. It's nae just speaking the dialect that's going on. Steve, over to you for our next song.
Well, this is a song called Dahooman. Dahooman's a Shetland word for the twilight just at the kind of end of the day. And it's a song that is a poem put to music. And it's Claire White and Francis Wilkins and Blyde Lasses. But just to make mention at this point about some awful sad news we had for Shetland a couple of weeks ago. The Shetland Folk Festival committee member and programmer Davy Henderson died very suddenly, and we're very, very sad to hear that in the folk music world. He was a great character and somebody who did a power of work for many musicians from all over the world, and he was celebrated and written about in the press for here to Nova Scotia. So this is for Davy, Blyde Lasses and Dahooman.
Nu et stagelien saft fast de hummen ordeling hem til der nest de fulls er flien der brood together under wing ar a bony floors is sleepen ar a lambs is boiled and warm peepin' the loo-will glows the worm. Minds do when we gee do together e the summer hede moo. We sat among the heather watching the dancing stavaloo. Should the winter will be coming, you'll see the storms glinted all lift, and the merry dancers roaming, rainbow glided till them red. Tis the good man's working, e the lift the land the sea, e the light and e the marking, this is mommy's liltery. E ne am for he is near thee, guiden like the murder die, is by you. Bis by you, bis by you, bis by.
Great. Claire White and Francis Wilkins making up Blyde Lasses for Shetland. And they went doing half a whale at our Hearst Festival on Deeside last year. So they're coming back by popular demand. You're listening to Scots Language Radio. This is Frieda Morrison, and with me in the studio is special guest, curator of the Royal Botanic Gardens in Edinburgh, Dave Mitchell, and my regular studio companion, musician and ethnologist Steve Byrne. Now, Dave, back to your cell for mere looks at the landscape, and it's power to inspire, I would say. Talk to birds and the beasties this time.
A lot of folk didn't ken that in his poems he makes references to about 60 different native birds and animals, including the Maori, he ken the mole. He talks about hurchins or hedgehogs, and he goes on about foxes and weasels and stoats and badgers. But he'd a knowledge of birds that was just nothing short of remarkable. You think about doing wee poem A Winter Night, written in 1786. Elk happening bird, wee helpless thing, that in the merry months of spring delighted me to hear thee sing. What comes o' thee? What wilt thou cower thy chattering wing and close thy ee? Here he's writing about a bird in winter, freezing cold, and then he gets fair annoyed in another poem, yen that I love, it's called The Wounded Hare. And this is where his use of English words and Scotch words blend together to hae real power to touch ye even now. The Wounded Hare. Inhuman man, curse on thou barbarous art, and blasted be thy murder, aiming eye. May never pity soothe thee with a sigh, and never pleasure glad thy heart. Imagine him out on the rig, freezing cold, and then he pits a plough through a wee moose's nest. And he's inspired by this. You can imagine him ploughing and thinking about this, and out it comes. Wee sleekit, gourn, timorous beastie. Oh, what a panic's in thy breastie. Thou needna start a wassy hasty wi' bicker and brattle. I would be laith to run and chase thee wi' murder and prattle.
You see, I've been speaking to you over the years about gardening, mostly about gardening. I have never kent that you were sick a fan of Burns, and I wish folk could actually see all the mannerisms and the hand gestures. And the,
we'll need to get a webcast.
We need to get a webcam out here to see all this, because you're drawing us in. He's a natural storyteller, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Right, we'll come back to you in a wee minute, because we're going to speak about romance in a wee while.
Oh, no.
Well, we'll maybe need just spend too long on it, but never mind. But a sadness has come over us again because, of course, we heard of the departure of Pete Seeger earlier on, one of the most celebrated icons, not just in the music scene, but in the worldwide arena for civil rights. Over to you again, Steve.
Well, I thought it would be lovely actually to hear a wee bit about some of Pete's connections with Scotland. It's been talked a wee bit in some of the kind of obituaries and discussions on the radio and things the last wee while, that he had a connection with some of the folk in Scotland like Matt McGinn, and also somebody that I've been working on their archive, Hamish Henderson. Folk that doesn't ken Hamish Henderson, he was a really influential folklorist, collecting loads of songs himself in the 1950s, essentially following on for what Burns's work was back in the 18th century. And Hamish and Pete had a bit of correspondence, to the point where Pete had actually sung versions of one of Hamish's own songs. And Hamish was similarly a peace campaigner, just like Pete, and they had a lot of similar outlook on life. So we dug up this version of Pete Seeger in 1965, singing in, I think it's in Pittsburgh,
it's
Pennsylvania,
a classic version.
Singing Freedom Come All Ye by Hamish Henderson.
Rock the wind through the clear days dawning, blows the clouds, heels to Gowrie o'er the bay. But there's mair nor rock wind blowing through this great glen o' the world today. It's a thought that can gower rottens, ah, the rogues that gang gallus fresh and gay. Tak the road and seek their lawnings, for their ill ploys to sport and play. Rough is the wind blowing over the bay, but there's even more strong wind blowing through this world today. It's a thought that can make your blood run faster to think that all these rogues that go marching down, they're going to have to go into some other line of business, tack the road and seek their lawnings for their ill ploys. No more will our bonny young men, our bonny callants, march to war when our braggarts boast. No more will the little children watch the ships sailing down the Brumalaw, taking the Scottish troops around the world. Nay, mair will our bonny callants march to war when our braggarts crusely craw.
The late, great Pete Seeger. What a life. And thank you, Steve, for finding that classic recording. What a wonderful piece of work that was. But you have been extremely busy this last month, nae just flitting hoose, but Steve, you've been preparing for an event in your native Arbroath, celebrating the work of, you know, Angus's finest writers and poets, Violet Jacob. Can I just say a wee bit about Violet Jacob before we go into a bit? She was born at the Hoose of Dun by Montrose in 1863. She was of aristocratic lineage, daughter of William Henry Kennedy Erskine, but she had a real insight into the whys and the words of local folk. Many of her poems have been picked into songs, and on Saturday the 1st of February, a special concert has been organised at Hospital Field Hoose in Arbroath. Now, Steve met up with organiser Lisa Simmons for the University of Dundee. She tells Steve how she first found out about Violet's work.
The first time I ever heard about her was when I was sitting my higher English, and we were given Anderson, a short story from the Lumhat. Right. And I read it and I was really blown away because it was so relevant to me coming from Angus. I think it speaks in a way, the language she uses and the words she uses and the phrases she uses are very specifically rural Angus.
In Scots?
In Scots, absolutely in Scots. And it just really touched something in me that no other writer at that point had. You know, I'd read Shakespeare and I'd read others, Burns, but I hadn't really read anything from my area. I have to say that it's something, there's something really special about the Angus Scots that she uses, that only people from Angus can really identify with, and I've read that. A book of hers was reviewed in 1904, The Interloper, and there was in the Montrose Review, I think it might have been McDermott, actually wrote and said that she, although she can be appreciated, there's something special that only people in Angus kind of get, but other people wouldn't miss.
What kind of things did she write
about? She has a real fascination with horsemen, and I think I really get that because ploughman and horseman, even as a teenager growing up, it's like, oh, he's good with horses. That was better than, you know, well, he's a Habsburg. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of that kind of thing. It was better than, oh, he's brilliant on the rugby pitch, or, you know, he's a great footballer. It's like he's good with horses was just... And she had a real fascination with them, and it permeates lots of work, like the Heat Horseman. There's mony ain that trails in silk, wha fain would gang wi you. But I am just a serving lass that toils to get her breed, and oh, ye're sweer to see the gowd I braid about my head. She's a beautiful young woman, and she's looking out the window and watching this Heat Horseman pass every day. Right. But she knows, although she fancies them rotten kind of thing, she knows that there is no kind of strata of society off limits to him.
Right.
You know, he could marry up or down, you know. And the ones that trail in silk admire him too. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the important thing there, yes, isn't it? Because she was related to a king by an illegitimate.
Yeah,
dancer.
That's right. She's William II's great great granddaughter or something. You know, there's a connection there. Mm-hmm. And she was a member of the aristocracy. You know, she was born in 1863, the House of Dun, which is outside of Montrose. very much an aristocratic seat of power. Although they were linked to the Jacobite uprising, the two brothers, one went out and one stayed and said no. But it was to really save the house and the land, it turns out, in the end. So, yeah, she had a really, if you like, posh background and upbringing. But what is revealed in her diaries and letters from India, or her letters to her mother, she was really interested in local people, like at home. Right. And I think it didn't really matter where she was. In Wales, where her mother came from, it's the same thing.
Right.
She really, you know, was interested in the ordinary man.
Okay.
And quite disparaging about the society she came from.
And that extended then to her use of language?
Oh, completely. Right. I think, although she wrote in English, she did, I think she found, especially after her son Harry died, I feel her poetry and her writing is really, I feel she can express herself more honestly. Using her Scots language.
Because Harry died in the first
1916,
World War.
Yeah, he did. And she didn't write another novel again.
Right.
She only wrote poetry, but I feel, and I think she wrote somewhere that it expressed her emotions, and she could only do it in Scots, really truthfully and honestly.
Mm-hmm. Thinking a wee bit more about Violet's use of language, now I've always thought it was quite an honest kind of Scots, and I'm obviously biased being an Angus man.
Yes.
And it speaks to me very clearly. But I never quite thought that it was the same in that kind of Caillard or Lallans sort of constructed Scots. I always thought there was a real...
Yeah, honesty too. I know exactly what you mean, Steve. I would say that from when I read it, well, say I've got to compare it, say to like some Mary and Angus even. Mary and Angus is her poetry is very good, if you want to say that sounds very weak, that's a weak compliment, but you know, it's wonderful in its own way. But Violet Jacob, I don't know, there's a heart and a soul to Violet Jacob's writing for me, and it's as if when I read parts of it there is someone sitting beside me speaking it to me rather than reciting poetry to me.
Well, I suppose what you're describing maybe speaks to the title of a couple of her first editions of poetry, Songs of Angus and More
yes.
Songs of Angus,
mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm.
I think is the clue there,
yes.
isn't it, in some respects?
And I think, you know, there is a well-used coach. You know, she was ironing in a moo, the ploughman's feet. She got freedom to roam that I don't think even the farmer's children would have got. And I think she listened and observed, like lots of great artists do. And I think that's Violet.
Lisa Simmons speaking about 20th century Angus poet Violet Jacob. Now, Steve, you've chosen one of Violet's songs called Halloween. Tell us a bit about it.
It's a brilliant kind of joining of the imagery of the goings-on at Halloween somewhere up in Angus and the Mearns, but also that story, really, of the wartime, because it was written about 1915, 1916, and just after her son Harry had died. So she's put that together, you know, all the goings-on, the merriment happening back in the Halloween celebrations, and thinking about one of the ploughmen that's had to gang away to war and didn't come back for France.
Our son Harry was killed in the Battle of the Somme, of course.
Aye.
So this is Halloween, sung by Lucy Pringle, and guitar played, of course, by the wonderful Chris Wright.
The tatty liftin's nearly through. They're ploughing while the barley grew, and after dark, round ilka stack, you'll hear the horsemen stand and crack. Lachlan, but I mind on you. A mindful often we hae seen 10,000 stars cake doon a tween the naked branches, and below baith fair man bothy hae their show. Allow we light so Halloween. There's bear we geysers at their tail, clearing the doors we run so kale, and fine you'll hear the skreeks and skirls Oh, lassies with their delicate curls, bobbing footy poles in the pail. The bothy fire is a loping head, a new heat horseman's kist is set. Breaks all the lumber by the blaze, the old stood that kept your clays. I canna soon to see it yet. But gin the old folks' tales are writ, and geese come hame on Hallow Night. Oh, friend, oh, friends, what would I gie to feel ye rax your hand to me atween the dark and canal? Across the wave, the wheelocks burn on ilka grave, and you and me, they'll out hae seen. You'll maybe hae your Halloween, yon twar your lion wi' the lave. There's drink and daffin sang and dance, and ploys and kisses get their chance. But Lachlan, man, the place I see is where the old kist used to be, and the licks o' Halloween in France.
Lucy Pringle with Chris Wright singing the song Halloween, written by Violet Jacob, and that song is from the CD The Speaking Heart. Fantastic lines in that, Steve.
Yeah, wonderful. And I should say at this point, of course, one of the people that brought Violet Jacob to the fore really was Jim Reid, because he had been the first person really to put music to a lot of her lyrics, and that's his tune.
Name some of Jim Reid's, I suppose, famous songs that he sang many times.
You'll maybe ken The Wild Geese or the Norlan Wind. It's kind of the Angus anthem, and it's that's Jim's music in Violet's
Fantastic
words again.
Tunes. I love that line, "Atween the dark and canal licht."
Aye, and that in "Friend, oh friends," like, what would I gie to feel your racks, your hand to me? I mean, I can see the movement in that. It's just
racks
fantastic.
The hand to me. It's good. New one. Whether we believe it or not, the days are getting longer. Spring is nae far away, and it's the licht that affects our behaviour patterns, apparently. Some folk think it's a drink, but if not, it's the licht. Soon young loons fancies mech turn to sooky marks. We'll not go into why. We're speaking about sooky marks earlier on, and it's maybe one of the sort of rites of passage you have to go through when you're doing your first few years of courtship. Some folk haven't got past sooky marks, I have to say that. Courtship rituals and other things. I am in the very presence of twa the maist romantic mannies in Scotland. Twa the maist romantic mannies in Scotland.
Fun, are they coming?
They're coming.
I thought they were here and had gone.
you just get the sense that control has gone out the window completely. Right, I'm going to give you some free rein here, blokes. And I maybe start off with you, Dave. Romance is in the air, Mr. Mitchell.
Well, I suppose I might have been like that yinch upon a time.
Okay, pick out some quotes before you go any further.
No.
See, I mean,
the best thing I can tell you about romance
I didn't
comes for the last poem I was talking about. and that was Tammuz. Because in that, Burns wrote, the best laid schemes of mice and men gonna have to glee. So just mind that when Valentine's Day comes and you're sending wee cardies and buying the one thing. Aye, Burns will come alive, he'll be doing his mischief round about then, because there'll be red roses gone everywhere.
Hoogh my Gandhi.
Everywhere.
That's quite a, and then, that's quite a leap. Red roses and then hoogh my Gandhi.
It's the same thing.
That's it.
That comes just, the same thing.
Aye, but it all comes down to the power of the one wee red, red rose. Oh, my love, it's like a red, red rose that's newly sprung in June. Oh, my love's like a melody that's sweetly played in tune. And fair thou art, my bonny lass, so deep in love am I. And I will love thee still, my dear, till the sea's gang dry. Till the sea's gang dry, my dear, and the rocks melt with the sun. And I will love thee still, my dear, while the sands o' life shall run.
Now we just need to pause slightly and just dwell on these words, but we haven't got our day to dwell on words, Mr. Mitchell, so I'm going back to Mr. Byrne here, because he's been raking about in books again to find rituals and customs to deal with romance in Scotland.
Aye, well, we're an aforomantic nation, of course, Frieda. We've got a few things here today with divination, which is really trying to work out fa's going to be your true love. So have you heard of a thing called a Carl Doddy? Is that much
on his I've heard about that.
There's kind of little plants. We used to hear Carl Doddy Wars.
Aye, it's ribwort.
Fecht.
So ribwort was teen when it was in bloom, and they took the blossom off, laid it in the left shoe, and put it under your pillow. And if the lover was to become the husband, the three stalks were again in full bloom by the morning. But if the lover was to prove untrue, the stalks remained without bloom.
In your left shoe?
Aye, your left shoe, apparently.
And true. See, my mind picks up small but irrelevant little bits like that. Netherine.
I heard a long time ago, now I'm scratching the grey cells here, but I have a notion I've come across something about divination and cabbages.
But we've now taken a very strange turn of conversation.
I think it's in this book here. Maybe I'll look it up. But
cabbages and romance, doesn't it?
Now, behave.
Here we go. You gang to the keel yard, and with your eyes blindfolded, you pull the first stalk of cabbage or greens that you touch. According to the quantity of earth that bade on the root, and according to the form of the stalk, whether well or ill shapen, were augured the amount of worldly means and the comeliness of the future husband or wife. You put it inside the door and the baptismal name of the etc.
So if he got an all twisted root, full a load of dirt, you are in for a dour day.
You ones are just getting out amongst. I'm going to mention you Banks and Brace because I love you. That last bit of your Banks and Brace, that's one of my favourites. Well, lick some hurt, I pulled a rose, full sweet upon its thorny tree, and my fast lover stole my rose, but he left the thorn with me. That's it then. That'll just be about it. And just before we finish, it may be worth noting that Burns only started collecting songs and writing songs when he was 27 years old. So it was just until he died, it was 10 years. It was about 10 years of collecting and writing that amount of songs. Bringing us blithely to the end of this episode of Scots Language Radio, I hope you've enjoyed tacking a keek into some of the nooks and crannies again. And let's ken fitz gun on the new side of the Burgh. We want to find out fitz happening with are the airts. The email address is info@scotslanguageradio.com. I'll say it again, info@scotslanguageradio.com. And Steve's got mere details for other bits of contact.
Aye, we've got a Fisk Loop page. www.facebook.com/Scots Language Radio. You can find us on Twitter at Scots Language, and there's a website which is scotslanguage.com/radio. And if you're listening on iTunes, if you wouldn't mind giving us a wee rating so we get up the charts a bit and mere folk can find the show.
Marty, we just about fill a programme with all the contact bits. And my thanks to my studio cronies, special guest Dave Mitchell, and the man in charge of sorting out the songs and other things, Steve Byrne. And another big thank you to our long-suffering, soon-sorter, Richard Werner. We'll be back next month. Hopefully by that time I'll have managed to find the Cabaret and Cabaret Radio. Scott's saying for the day to think about. There's files you think, and files you dinna, and files is better natal. Scots quote for the day, of course, for Burns. Well, with some power, the gift to gie us, to see ourselves as others see us. It would fae money a blunder free us and foolish notion. Fae me Freedom Morrison, buy the new.